your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to another episode of Alchemy. Co-hosting with me today, my pal Chad Bronstein, founder and CEO at Philo. And joining us, the great Mitch Kahn, CEO of Grassroots Cannabis. Gents, always great to hang and great to share the mic with both of you today.
Well, appreciate you having me, Jeff and Chad. I'm always happy to talk to both of you guys.
And we're excited to have you.
So Mitch, you, first of all, have an incredible reputation in the industry and not to mention have come up, I think, multiple times on a few of our shows from guests. So you're pretty much... You got a lot of clout out there, so it's nice to finally get you on. And, you know, you co-founded Grassroots back in 2014 and successfully led the company from, you know, its inception into a vertically integrated national cannabis business. And would love for you to tell us a little bit more about how you led this amazing growth.
You know, I'd be lying if I told you this was the plan the day we first thought about cannabis. But, you know, I think our original... Our original interest in the industry came from my partner, who was really his focus and his idea. My partner Matt Darren, who's the COO of the business with me, and a key component and key partner in what I do every day and what we do every day. But we spent a bunch of time, obviously, investigating the industry, and we looked at it, and kind of our perspective was, let's apply in Illinois for both dispensaries, cultivation licenses, try to get a ticket to play, if you will. We were fortunate enough to win 3 dispensary licenses and have taken that and grown it to 61 licenses across 13 states. And actually more than that, if you include the Missouri licenses. So it's probably 67 or 8 licenses across 13 states at this point. It has been certainly an absolutely crazy ride, filled with lots of fun, lots and lots of challenges. This has been the most challenging, interesting and challenging thing I have done in my business career by far.
That's awesome, Mitch. Speaking of challenges, me and you talk about this all the time in the current situation. Let's talk about COVID for a second. It's all we see and hear about in both our industry and just in general in the news every single day. But how has it changed from your cannabis perspective, how your company is operating? How are you guys handling it? And just love to hear both all the challenges you're facing, but also I'm guessing there's a little bit of positives coming out of cannabis being an essential.
First, as you point out, cannabis is an essential business as defined by almost every state in the country. Certainly every state we do business in, both medical and rec have been deemed to be essential. Not exactly everywhere, but every state we do business in a significant way, which is a little bit bizarre. And you guys understand this as well, that we are quote unquote an essential business. But meanwhile, we still are federally illegal. We still can't have real institutional investors invest in our companies. We still can't access any of the SBA stimulus bills. Lots of things we still can't do. We still have draconian tax implications because of 280E. So that's still frustrating for us. And I think, you know, one of the things that we have found as a team is that I don't think there's another industry or another business better set up to deal with the complete insanity that COVID has produced than we are. Because if you think about what we've been doing since the day we started the business, is we are facing incredible challenges literally on a daily basis. We've built a team that knows how to solve those kinds of problems. So that's been really, really great to see over the last 5, 6, 7 weeks. In terms of the changes we have made, literally every single process in virtually every single facility is completely different. The easy things to look at and understand obviously are in all of our medical states, in almost all of our medical states, we're now permitted to do curbside delivery. So we have online ordering and curbside delivery, and in many cases, an electronic paying system that has been put in place so that customers, patients don't have to leave their vehicle. They literally, all they have to do is show their ID through the window. It gets taken in through our system. their package comes out to them. They've either paid, prepaid, or they pay with cash right there. So they literally have to open their window to have somebody hand them a package and hand cash, maybe, and they get to leave. So it's a, you know, we've really done a great job minimizing the interaction for people, which I think has been a great thing. You know, and we're continuing to work with a lot of states and push some of those states politically. There's, you know, many of the states have been more progressive. States like Maryland has been on the forefront of making changes. They've allowed us to add employees without going through the crazy background check process we have to do in many states to reduce the timeline to hire new people, because we have real challenges with people who've been getting sick, et cetera, obviously, or concerned about that. So you have people who, you know, normal process is 4 to 6 weeks to get somebody hired. Maryland has allowed that process to happen in 2 or 3 days now, not 4 to 6 weeks. We're hoping states like Pennsylvania and Illinois get there soon. We're working on those kinds of things. But literally every process in every retail store and in every cultivation facility is completely different. Cultivation facilities, we move to a kind of half the team on, half the team off process now for, I think, 5 weeks, under an abundance of caution, because we don't want to be in a situation like, what's the name of that company, Smithfield Foods, I think, that lost basically their entire workforce and had to shut down. As you guys understand, if that happens in a cultivation facility, you're out of business, not for a week or two, you're out of business for 6 or 7 months. So, you know, we've taken an abundance of caution in those facilities. But meanwhile, Chad, as you point out, we are also in the midst of major construction projects in every one of our three largest cultivation facilities, quadrupling the capacity in every one of those. Those are still undergoing and still happening a little bit slower because of the COVID precautions. And sales have been, sales have been strong at very, very strong at very, you know, at points and very solid at other points. And we've just come through, obviously, 420, which is a significant day in the, you know, in the cannabis culture. And, you know, we really focused very hard in that situation of trying to push some of our 420 business to the week prior, because we wanted to reduce the number of people in the store that day. And we were able to do that. And we had our, we had three, I think, starting Wednesday, we had 3 out of 5 days were consecutively the highest business days we've ever done as a company. So, so there have certainly been some positives, no doubt.
That's incredible.
So Mitch, you know, I think obviously crises that take place and, you know, businesses have to change and adapt and innovate. There's a lot of resilience that happens. And there's also a lot of, you know, different ways that we actually look at building businesses. And I think from, you know, everything that's taken place in the last month and a very heavy focus on the fact that cannabis has been deemed as essential, not so much to us who are in the industry, but to everybody else across the country that is now starting to open their eyes. There's a very big shift in consumer perception. And there's also a movement of more people saying, hey, this is essential and it's not available in my state. So I'm just curious, you know, from you and kind of if you could look into the future a little bit, but do you think that, you know, regulation might actually be sped up across some of the other states kind of post COVID-19 of seeing what we've already seen in the last 6 weeks?
So, you know, Jeff, one of the things I promised myself I wouldn't do anymore a while ago is predict what politicians do, because that's a game you can't ever win. And I think what we're dealing with now is good evidence of that, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, here's what I do think. I do think we have been on a trajectory state by state that is clear and evident. More and more states are jumping on the bandwagon with medical programs of one sort or another. And then more and more medical states are moving slowly in many cases, but moving toward recreational adult use programs. That's not going to slow down. That's going to continue. Is it going to speed up? You know, I hope so. I think so. But God knows, because again, that's in the hands of the politicians. The other piece of this, which in many regards is as important or more important, are the federal issues. And, will this stir and stimulate the federal politicians to make this federally legal? I don't have any idea what the political ramifications will be here, whether that will or won't happen. What I do know is that we can be a substantial part in any state and federally of the stimulus program to get the economy back on its feet. This industry single-handedly can create hundreds of thousands of jobs nationally and can help get put people back to work, help get the economy working. I don't mean to say we can fix the entire economy or fix the unemployment that we're facing, but it can begin to do it in a way that is costless to the state governments and costless to the federal governments, and in fact can create additional revenue through taxes. So I think it is, objectively, it is a, it's a very positive opportunity. And I think objectively, it can help solve a bunch of problems for both states and federally. But the reality is nobody looks at cannabis objectively. Everybody comes to the table with their own mindset, and we got to continue to work hard to try to change those minds.
On to kind of the topic, Mitch, of changing minds, but a different, more lighthearted question, because I know the answer to it, because I spent a lot of time with you. But you were obviously an entrepreneur and were successful in real estate. And we talk a lot about this podcast of how you actually get into cannabis. What was the stigma around you going from real estate to cannabis, especially in the area where you're at? Like, what was the stigma?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you a couple things. First of all, I've told this story a handful of times. You guys may have heard this, but as we kind of began our process to investigate the business, I went and sat down and had a conversation with my dad, who's since passed away, by the way. But I grew up in a family where he looked at me when I was in high school and said, "You don't ever have to worry about the cops catching you if you have marijuana on you," because it was marijuana then, guys, not cannabis. If you have marijuana, if I find it, I'm calling the cops myself on you. And I believed him. I'm still not sure he wouldn't have. I don't really know. But it was one of those moments that truly I remember to this day. And I went and sat down with him and talked to him about our business, what we were thinking about getting into the business. And he looked at me and he said, "If you can find something that helps my arthritis, I'm in."
There you go.
And it's a funny story, but it truly was one of the moments where I looked at my partner and I said, if he's going to change his view, the whole world's going to change their perspective on this plant. And, I think that has proven to be very much the case. And, when we started this in 14, there was massive stigma. The word you use is accurate. I can tell you that there are still a number of our personal friends that will not speak to us to this day because we got involved in this business. That's hard to believe, I know, especially for, younger guys like you, Chad, because, the stigma is different, I think, for, 30-year-olds than it is for, almost 60-year-olds.
I was going to say, the funny story is when I first started in this, my uncle thought I was a drug dealer. And I started a technology business. So I agree with the stigma for sure.
Well, imagine what we would have thought if you actually were a drug dealer like I am.
Yeah.
So it's been certainly an interesting ride. And my cynical view of the world is anybody who thought so highly of themselves and poorly of me and my wife for us getting involved in this business, who doesn't want to talk to me anymore, I'm frankly happy not to waste my time with them either. I think one of the things that this venture and this adventure have really helped me be better at as a person is I think it has really opened my eyes to just different ways of thinking and different ways of looking at medicine and different ways of thinking at all kinds of things. It has personally, I've gotten involved in things like yoga, which I never would have. And I attribute some of that to a more open-minded approach to things that comes from this business. And I think it's one of the real positives for people in this business.
I love it. And I think, obviously coming from, your previous background in real estate and now jumping into cannabis and now doing this for, quite some time, I'm curious if you could share with us maybe some of your biggest learnings, right? Beyond yoga.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I can tell you, Jeff, about yoga is I'm not very good at it. I love it. But I'm not very good.
Dad's great at it. He could definitely give you some tips. Every day he does it.
Yeah. You know what? You know, some look. I will tell you that. You know, some of this is just relearning things you know from other business activities, or highlighting them in a different way, or understanding them in a different way. But the single biggest challenge as we started this business, without question, no doubt about it, was people. And if you guys know anything about the business and understand it back from 2014, you know, Chad has it easy today. He doesn't even understand how easy he has it. When we started this business, the only people who would come work for us, literally, the only people who would come work for us in any role were people who loved the plant. And I mean loved the plant. And, you know, I mean loved the plant every single day, most of every single day. So that, as you can imagine, presented significant challenges. It, you know, lots of them, and a number of them obviously are still with us in the company. But, you know, lots of them were super passionate about the plant and about the culture around the cannabis business. And that was really helpful to help create the right culture for the business, but very challenging in terms of running a business, as you can imagine. You know, and I think that has continued to be, in many regards, our single biggest challenge. You know, a lot of people would say the biggest challenge in this business, Jeff, is capital. Or a lot of people would say the biggest challenge in the industry is regulation. The truth is that, you know, we've gotten good at regulation. We understand how to deal with it. You know, the great majority of the regulators are fair. They're difficult to deal with, but they're fair. The rules are generally fairly straightforward, even though we may not like them all the time. You know, where it gets difficult is where there's flexible interpretations and they change their views over and over again. But other than that, we like regulation. Regulation creates real opportunity for those who know how to do it and know how to create it. It's one of the big advantages to the Midwest and East Coast companies as compared to a lot of the original California businesses that frankly never had to deal with regulation and don't know how to deal with it. And by the same token, capital is certainly a challenge at this moment in time, obviously a significant challenge. But, you know, I have always found in every business I've been involved in, if you present a good opportunity to people and you know, that they invest both in the business and in the people, and capital has been difficult, no question, but we've been able to maneuver through that pretty well. People are, without a doubt, in my view, the single most important part of the business, the single most challenging part of the business, you know, in some regards, both the best thing and the most difficult thing in what I deal with on a daily basis.
Well, Mitch, I'm going to give you a compliment, and it's usually, I usually don't compliment you. I like to mess with you usually, but if anyone I'm listening is like, I met Mitch randomly at a Canaccord conference, and Mitch, like we mentioned earlier in the show, is a powerhouse in cannabis, and I got introduced to him, and he was super helpful with me and just took me under his wing to teach me a lot of the cannabis industry. So when you say people, Mitch, I think it's people internally, but it's also surrounding yourself with people externally, because we couldn't have been as successful as we have without people like you or some people on our board just directing us. So I want to give you a compliment there, because you didn't know me for anything, and you kept me with me just to teach me and get me to understand. You're very tough and made sure I was listening, but you're very, you helped direct me in the right, countless times in the right direction. So I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate the compliment. I think, you know, I think you're absolutely right. It is people in the company, but it's also people you surround yourself with. And look, this business has tons of challenges on a daily basis. And if you don't have the right team, no matter how easy the issues are, you can't get it right. And if you do have the right team, no matter how challenging the issues are, and this is a perfect moment in time for that, I mean, who would have thought we could have completely pivoted our business, changed every protocol, every way we do business, literally every way we do business in every store in multiple states with people not seeing each other, with being at home? It's remarkable. And the crazy thing to me, and actually the most interesting part of this all is going to be as we begin at some point to come out of this, and we just had a meeting this morning on beginning to put a task force together to to figure out what it looks like as we come out of it. I think what we're going to find is making the decision to stay home was the easy part. How we come out of it, what it looks like, how we go back to the office, do we go back to the office, who works at home, how do you work at home, all those kinds of questions will be the most challenging that we all face. And I actually think will help define what companies in this industry and others become successful over the next period of time as to how you deal with that. Because I do think it's going to be, you know, when we all deal with absolutes, it's easier. It may not be pleasant, but it's easy. When there's gray areas is when challenge comes about, and when people when the right teams can get the right results and some don't.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be a lot of innovation coming forward as we're kind of nearing the point of returning, you know, from a technology perspective, you know, from a productivity perspective. There's going to be new ways that we're going to be doing business, you know, and learn from everything that we've been dealing with the last 6 weeks.
There's no question about that. I don't disagree with you at all. And you know, one of the examples I can give you is a completely off topic example. It's not really even business necessarily, but my son, as you guys may know, just recently bought a summer camp up in northern Wisconsin, and you know, facing a ton of challenges trying to figure out if they're actually able to have camp this summer or not. But one of the things they have done is they have put together every other week they do a campfire virtually on Zoom, and they've had 100 kids a couple weeks in a row here get on a Zoom call and be able to see each other and talk to each other and interact with each other and sing songs or whatever that they do. But it's one of those things where he stepped back and he said, what an incredible way to connect with my guys and keep that community together in a way that we never did when we were in normal times. And, you know, by the same token, I am, you know, as you guys both may or may not know, I'm a, you know, I love wine and do a fair amount of, have at least in the past, done a fair amount of traveling to Napa and other places, and have a collection of wine that we like to drink. And one of the wineries we're very involved in has started doing every Friday afternoon a virtual wine tasting. So we've been on 3 or 4 weeks with 35 couples around the country. Didn't know one of them before this, but you know, we open a particular bottle and people talk about it a little bit, mostly talk about other things. And it's again, from the winery's perspective, what an incredible way to connect with your community. So we're beginning, you know, we are quite frankly, we haven't had time to think about that in our business yet, but we're now just beginning to think about it. How do we adapt those thoughts to what we can do in our cannabis community? And how do we use some of those things to bring people closer together and keep people more connected? Because that's at the end of the day, what this business is all about. It's what any business is about, is connecting with your people, with your customers, with your patients, whatever it may be, and creating a real community.
Yeah. I got to say really quick, you know, Chad, you know, for us internally, you know, with employees and externally with clients and, you know, even doing this show, I feel like we have, at this point in time, like I feel so connected to people, even though we're so far apart. And it's because none of us are traveling and none of us are at events. And we're just kind of, you know, we're in one place and we're working harder than ever. But I definitely feel a new sense of like gratitude towards people, you know, and I think that's the one thing that many of us miss, is that kind of human, real human interaction, like not on a screen. But it has kind of created this heightened sense of community for sure.
Yeah, Jeff, I think you're perceptive. And I think the other kind of corollary to that is it has removed the freneticism from all of our lives.
Yeah.
Now the question is, will it come back? And how do we let it come back? And are we capable of taking that deep breath and trying to not travel as much and not run around as much? And are we willing to say, let's do a Zoom call instead of get on a plane and go see each other? So I think that'll be really interesting to see how that develops.
Mitch, I'm still waiting on our trip to Toronto that we were supposed to take.
I know.
but before we do our quick fire questions, but I think for all the listeners, where do you see Grassroots in the next 3 years? I mean, you guys have built an amazing brand. Where do you want it to be in 3 years from now?
That's a wonderful question. You know, we certainly think about, and I certainly think about long-term strategy and long-term vision all the time. I will admit to you, the last 6 weeks, every single person just had their head down trying to run the business. So we've not been very focused on where we're going to be in 2 months, let alone in 2 years right now. But, you know, I think, you know, where do I want to be? You know, I want to continue to build the great team we've built, continue to grow our business. And I think you'll see very measured expansion. You know, you're not going to see us double the number of states over the next 2 or 3 years. But I do think you're going to see continued substantial growth. You know, I think you're going to see new innovative products. We have an incredibly interesting, great pipeline of new products coming to the table, even in the midst of COVID, that are going to begin to roll out here pretty soon as we hit, you know, as we hit the additional capacity in our three major state growth facilities. But I think it's to continue to build the good name and the brand that we have built at Grassroots, as well as Herbology and Greenhouse. You know, to kind of continue that trajectory and grow the business and to continue to create the right opportunities for our team and for our investors and for our patients and our customers.
All right, Chad, you ready for some quick fire questions for Mitch?
Yes, I am.
All right, I'll start. So Mitch, really very simple. Just, you know, you don't have to think too hard. They're very simple questions, except maybe one.
Sure, let's go.
Okay. How would you describe the color yellow to a blind person? Remember, they can't see color.
Well, being a lifelong Green Bay Packer fan, I'll go with, yellow isn't quite gold, but we'll call it gold today instead of yellow. So, I would just think of whatever reminds you of winning and a great team. That's what you should think about when you think about yellow.
What about the Cleveland Browns? Just kidding.
this is a family show, so I won't answer that, Chad. Sorry.
Mitch, what's your favorite hobby outside of work?
My favorite hobby outside of work is probably one of two things. So I'll give you both answers. One is wine. I love wine. My wife and I do a lot of traveling for wine. I guess you could call us collectors, but I really don't think we're collectors. We just like to buy wine so we can consume it. And we love going to events. So we do a ton of sporting events. You know, as I said, lifelong Green Bay Packer fan, Wisconsin fan, season tickets to both. Love live music, so we see a ton of live music. So I don't know what I'm going to do over the next year because I don't think any of that stuff's going to happen. But I'll just have to drink more.
Well, I know what we're getting you for your holiday present. So aside from Chad, who inspires you?
That's a great question. That's such a multifaceted question. I will tell you, although he's gone just a little over 3 years now, my dad inspires me literally every single day. Not necessarily on the business side, but he was one of the most thoughtful, considerate, well-rounded human beings, charitable, that I've ever dealt with and ever known. And that guides me literally every day. I think about how he would have done things and how he would have looked at things. I know it's kind of a cliche answer. Beyond that, there's a host of different people and probably only parts of a bunch of those people, right? Like I look at things, you know, people like Jeff Bezos and what he has built, which is staggering to me. Again, no comment on personal lives and other those kinds of things with people like that. You look at Bill Gates and you look at, again, what he has built, remarkable. But more importantly to me, his commitment to do good with what he has, I think is a guiding principle of how we all have to live our lives to whatever degree we're able. So those are just a couple quick thoughts. Probably better answers if I had a little more time to think about it.
Great.
Favorite? Favorite restaurant in Chicago?
Bavette's. The atmosphere is incredible. The food is unbelievable. By the way, people love the steak. That's a lot of what they talk about. The fried chicken might be the best fried chicken of all time. And if you can, go sit downstairs in one of the booths. It's one of the most romantic best spots in the city.
Mitch, you haven't taken me there yet? Come on.
Although I heard a rumor that they're doing curbside pickups, so I was thinking of making a trip down and bringing it home one night.
First thing that you'll do when you get out of quarantine?
Hug my kids. My kids are all adult, and they don't live in the house. And I actually saw my son this morning, who stopped by and waved as he drove up to northern Wisconsin to his camp, as he said he'd rather be in 260 acres than 800 square feet in an apartment in the city. But to be able to say goodbye to him and not give him a hug was just ridiculous. So,
yeah. No, I think we're all looking forward to, you know, returning to that normalcy. So, but listen, Mitch, you know, really appreciate you coming on the show. And obviously, you know, you're a mentor to so many people and, you know, can't thank you enough.
Oh, my pleasure.
You're a mentor to me as well. And I've appreciated it.
I appreciate it. And I will tell you, I actually feel the same way. You teach me things every time we talk about stuff, and I appreciate that.
All right, Mitch. Well, listen, we'll let you get on with your day, and thanks so much.
All right, guys. My pleasure. Happy to do it.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.